Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 11th chapter, text number 38, translation. This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though he is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. Very important point. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. I'm picking a particular portion of this purport because it's relevant to today's subject of Narottam. Prabhupada's purport. Even his learned devotees are not affected by the influence of the material modes. The great six Goswamis of Vrindavan all came from greatly rich and aristocratic families, but when they adopted the life of mendicants at Vrindavan, superficially they appeared to be in wretched conditions of life, but factually they were the richest of all in spiritual values. Such Mahabhagavatas are first-class devotees, although moving amongst men, are not contaminated by honor, insult, hunger or satisfaction, sleep or wakefulness, which are all resultant actions of the three modes of material nature. Similarly, some of them are engaged in worldly dealings, yet are unaffected. Unless these neutralities of life are there, one cannot be considered situated in transcendence. So today we're honoring the appearance of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Om Jnana Timarandasya Janan Janashalakaya Chaksuhun Militam Minakasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayate Gurin Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurun Dinitarino Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shurasi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So a couple of Sundays ago, Sesha Prabhu gave a lecture that focused on heroes in our lives. And certainly I'm not the first, and I know I won't be the last to mention how Narottam Das Thakur is one such hero in the lives of the followers of Srila Prabhupada and his ISKCON society. From the very beginning of our devotional life, when we really knew nothing about acharyas or Vaishnava history, we knew two prominent historical personalities, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. Now, Srila Prabhupada, of course, was very fond of the songs of Narottam Das Thakur. He would sing them quite often and quote from them even more so. His classes were filled, as they say, peppered with the seasoning of Narottam Das Thakur's songs. It's interesting, Narottam, for all that we know about him, he only wrote two books, Premchandika and Prarthana. And of course, we know these two books are extremely famous. As the story goes, one aspiring disciple came to Gorkhasur Das Babaji and asked him, Baba, how can I develop prema? He said, oh, that is very easy. Take 5 anna, which was the currency at that time, go to the marketplace, buy Prem Bhakti Chandrika and Prarthana by Narottam Das Thakur and read them every day. That's simple. So this is how high the standard of teaching that was there in Narottam's songs, poems. These weren't deep philosophical works, although they contain all the essence of philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, these were very favored by Prabhupada. You know, one can say, oh, he was Bengali, Narottam was Bengali. One can say all these things, but the fact of the matter is, Narottam Das Thakur's presence in the lives of all Vaishnavas is so strong. So, it's understandable, Narottam Das Thakur, even as a standalone personality, is very prominent in our devotional life, in our devotional activities. Yet, he was not a standalone personality. Association. In his early years, he was very seriously attached as a young boy to this old Brahmin, Krishnadas, who used to come and speak to him about the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. And in his Braj years, of course, he was extremely devoted as the disciple of Loknath Goswami. He developed a very deep and intimate, yet student relationship with Jiva Goswami. And during those same years, he developed a very tight friendship with Srinivas and Shyamananda, to the point that Shastra often says they were three bodies with one mind. And in the years after that, when he left Braj and went on for his preaching field, he developed an unbreakable friendship and relationship with Ramchandra Kaviraj. And then, of course, as an aging guru, he had a very deep emotional relationship with his disciple Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. So he was never a standalone personality. Vaishnava Sangha was always, always the foundation of Narottam's life. Now, his life is no secret to any of us. We've all heard endless classes about Narottam Das Thakur. We've all heard his pastimes repeatedly. Most notably, we're fortunate to have the somewhat recent book of Sitala Thakurani on Narottam, which is, in my humble opinion, the gold standard of Narottam's pastimes. Yet we continue to speak about his pastimes time after time after time after time. And if we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, these repeated pastimes will not bore us. Oh, that again. I heard that already. What else can I listen to? But instead, it will foster our enthusiasm for such hearing. And it's an interesting dynamic of Krishna consciousness. The more we hear, the more we become purified. The more we become purified, the more we want to hear. And so it grows back and forth like this, endlessly. So this is the enthusiasm we should approach the process of hearing about these great acharyas, even if we've heard them many times. I asked Dina Bandhu Prabhu, I said, you know, you're famous for taking devotees around Braj to all these holy places and all. And I've been with you several times myself, and you tell the same stories all the time. He says, yes. Is there a reason not to tell these same stories? He says, we have to hear these same stories over and over and over. As Prabhupada said, repetition finally sinks into the brain. So important. Now, when I get the opportunity to speak about Narottam Das Thakur in my Kartik lectures on the acharyas at the MBT, I usually spend 4 to 5 days speaking about Narottam, 1.5 hour sessions each day. So you can kind of imagine the anxiety I was in knowing I got 45 minutes. And then I have to rush off to work. But at any rate, we'll do what we can do. Before we start, though, I would like to read some prayers that are appropriate and that are blessings for us. This first section is from a book called the Bhakti Mala, text number 202. One should not be surprised when reading the glories of the devotees as described in Shastra. Even in the age of Kali, there have been many saintly persons who appeared and displayed exalted positions. One should give up dry and useless arguments and have faith in the descriptions of the sublime character and astonishing activities of devotees. Only then can one realize the true position of a devotee. Text 207. The greatest treat of my life would be to smear the dust from the feet of all devotees who have appeared or will appear in the future in all the four yugas on my head. Text 210. If you wish to attain the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, simply glorify his devotees. If you do this without offense, you will receive his shelter. Otherwise, if you avoid doing so, all of your pious deeds will be useless like dried up seeds. Text 211. A devotee who collects the descriptions of the devotee's glories, qualities, and activities, who explains these, or who hears about them, and approves of such talks, will become dear to the Lord like a son or a daughter. The Lord will take such a devotee upon his lap. If a devotee of the Lord becomes attached to speaking about the glories of the devotees, he certainly becomes a shareholder in the piety of those devotees. From the Chaitanya Mangala of Lochan Das Thakur, we offer these following words. I pray to Sri Vignasana, Lord Ganesh, who has the body of a huge elephant with one tusk. He brings success in all one's endeavors. All glories to that Lord Ganesh, the son of Parvati. With folded hands, I pray to Lord Shiva and Parvati. Let us all fall at their feet, offering our respects. Lord Vishnu is the only master of the three worlds. Lord Shiva and Parvati can award anyone the boon of Vishnu Bhakti. I pray that Goddess Saraswati will play on my lips so that they will glorify Narottam Das Thakur. May the wonderful topics of Narottam Das Thakur flow from my mouth by the grace of Goddess Saraswati. I humbly beg the demigods and all my superiors that nothing will obstruct my attempt to glorify Narottam Das Thakur. Let me not ask for the boon of wealth, for I am fallen and sinful. Please allow me to complete this speaking without any difficulty. Let me glorify the pure devotees of Lord Vishnu and the most fortunate Mahabhagavatas. These exalted devotees purify the world with their divine qualities. They are merciful to all, and everyone loves them. Everyone loves them. Such devotees are the most auspicious personalities in the world. And one prayer that I just got last minute here. This is it's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's Rupa Goswami speaking about his Vidagdha Madhava, which I have adapted a bit for the purpose of this subject matter. O learned devotees, I am by nature ignorant and low, yet even though it is coming from me, these pastimes of Narottam Das Thakur are filled with descriptions of the transcendental attributes of such devotee. Therefore, will not such speaking bring about the attachment to the highest goal of life? Although its wood may be ignited by a low-class man, fire nevertheless can purify gold. Similarly, although I am low by nature, this speaking may help cleanse the dirt from within the heart of all who hear it. There's a wonderful collection of prayers called these are written by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who comes in Narottam's line, and it's called the Narottam Astakam. I offer respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur, a sincere follower of Lord Gaurangadev, emanating a shower of the nectar of the holy name with his splendor, the moon of his mouth destroys the darkness of ignorance. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Blissful by singing Krishna's glories, he would sometimes bathe in streams of perspiration, and the splendor of his teeth and gentle smile would illuminate all directions. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. Hearing the madrangas and the sound of the holy name, he would dance, moving his enchanting lotus feet, and the hairs on his body would be erect in ecstasy. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. His dancing dispelled the Gandharva's pride. His devotional activities filled everyone with wonder. His songs made him famous. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. He would sometimes faint in ecstasy and fall to the ground, his body decorated with dust. The very fortunate would see him in that way. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. In place after place, the splendor of his mercy uprooted the people's thirst for anything other than Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. His firm faith in devotional service to Krishna is just like a necklace of precious stones. His touch is like a sparsimony jewel, and his words are like the four Vedas. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srila Narottam Das Thakur. The devotees always wonder, is he devotional service personified? Is he the essence of renunciation who has descended to the world of human beings in this form? May the dancing of Srila Narottam Das Thakur's lotus feet, which is graceful with the melodious sounds of kartals and mridangas, and which is sweet with the honey of Lord Gauranga, fulfill the spiritual desires of me, his servant, Vishwanath Chakravarti. So when we begin the story of Narottam, it is mandatory to predate ourselves to his actual appearance because Mahaprabhu foretold his appearance. In Mahaprabhu's setting of the scene for his appearance is essential to understanding the life of Narottam. So one time Mahaprabhu was with Haridas, Nityananda, Vakreshwar Pandit, and a few others. They were doing Nam Sankirtan. And they were going by the Padma River. And at a certain point, Mahaprabhu stopped. And he faced the village that was across from the Padma River. And he cried out in a loud voice, "Oh, Narottam! Oh, Narottam!" Now, you can imagine Mahaprabhu calling out like that in the middle of a kirtan. Amazing as it would be, it was even more amazing because Nityananda turned to Haridas and said, "Who's Narottam? We don't have anybody in the associates that is named Narottam. Who's he speaking about?" And at this, crying out like this, Mahaprabhu fell to the ground, rolling in the dust. Nityananda leaned down and whispered to him, "Mahaprabhu, who is this Narottam?" Mahaprabhu explained that after we have all left, a great personality, Narottam, will appear to carry on the Sankirtan movement. So with this, Mahaprabhu got up and he entered into the Padmavati River. When he entered into this place, this river, the waves of the river coming in contact with the pure spiritual transcendental body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to manifest ecstasy. Churning and churning and flowing and overflooding the banks, and to the point that Mother Padmavati herself manifested from the river with folded hands and stood before the Lord. "My dear Lord, what is it you desire?" Mahaprabhu said, "I am going to place with you the embodiment of love of God." Now some stories say that Mahaprabhu gave her a pot of golden prema. And some say that he placed within her care an embodiment of a hue of golden prema. Either way, both are accepted. Either way, he gave love of God to Padmavati. And said to her, "When Narottam, in the future, when Narottam enters into your waters, you please deliver this gift to him." Padmavati is a very intelligent personality, and she said, "My dear Lord, I'm a sacred river. People bathe in my waters all the time. How am I going to know who's Narottam? So many people come in and out of my waters." He said, "When that person enters into your waters and you react in the same way you have when I entered in, you will know that's Narottam." She acknowledged this, disappeared back into the waters. Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Haridas, Vakreshwar, they continued on with their Nam Sankirtan. So the scene is set. Birth of Narottam is indicated. As they say, the wheel of time turned, and finally, on the sixth hour of the full moon day, which today is the full moon, you'll see this evening, all the auspicious signs were visible. And at that time, Narottam took his birth to fulfill the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His mother, Narayani, very, very radiant with beauty. And she wept in great joy as she lovingly, with just such joy, gazed on the face of her charming son. It mentions that a unearthly, meaning spiritual, effulgence filled the entire delivery room, and it glowed. Everything in the room glowed. And everyone that was present in the room, just intense happiness swelled in their hearts at the birth of this child. And from that moment, everything in the village of Khetri became auspicious. The residents all became purified. They felt as if they'd been cleansed of all misgivings that may have been within their hearts forever. Tears filled their eyes, and spontaneously they began to chant the name of the Lord, devotion. Many of them rushed to the home of Krishnananda Dutt. This was Narottam's father, who happened to be the king. He was a zamindar, as they were called in the time. He was a great landowner and tax collector, and you know, had great responsibilities and great wealth. And so many people came to the palace hearing that the son had been born to bring and offer gifts. And it mentions how he would receive people on one hand while giving gifts and charity and cows on the other hand to Brahmins, and he was just so busy in this way, you know. Everybody that came in and got the darshan of this little boy Narottam, their hearts were just warmed. And Krishnananda couldn't take his face off the child. So looking at the child, and yeah, here's your gift, thank you very much for this gift, here's some cows over there. Multitasking in its finest ability. So an interesting thing happened. Now this is about 50 years after the departure of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. About that time frame, 50 years or so. And they were devotees of the Lord. But the most amazing thing happened is after Narayani Mata gave birth to Narottam, she saw with her own eyes the divine appearance of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Mahaprabhu, and Advaita Mahaprabhu dancing in the delivery room. Now, I don't know about any of you, but none of these three were present in my birth. Imagine that. She perceived Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, and Advaita all dancing in ecstasy. And this was just most amazing to her. Anyway, they watched jubilantly as their son began to grow just like the moon, and Krishnananda, he just knew no pleasures but looking upon the jewel-like face of his son. So they arranged for the astrologer to come and read the chart, pick the name, you know, because there are four or five different ways for picking a name. One of them has to do with the constellation the child is born under. That will be the first syllable of the child's name. So the astrologer looked at everything and he said, this son, this boy, should be called Narottam. Nara is the constellation. Naru means the humans. And Uttam means the best of. He is the best of all human beings, and he will bring great joy, great happiness to the family. He will not only bring joy and happiness to the family, he will be the cause of all auspiciousness for everyone. Thus, Narottam, the best of all human beings. The astrologer gave a warning, though. He said, however, I see here that you should keep him away from rivers. If he goes near rivers, great calamity will come in his life. Now, those of us that heard the first part of the story, which Narayani and Krishnananda did not, we know what this means. So, at any rate, during his childhood, you know, everything went on. The grain ceremony came. I love telling this story. It's one of my favorite stories to tell at grain ceremonies, how they went to feed him the grains and he didn't accept the grains. And now, Krishnananda had not just, okay, you want to come over, a couple of people, and we'll give some grains. This is a huge mahotsava. You know, decorations and music and, you know, just everything, and you know, all kinds of arrangements are made, and guest lists, and prasad, and just, oh, you know. So, time came, the climax of the grain ceremony, to give greens to the baby. And they gave to Narottam, and he wouldn't take. They gave again, he wouldn't take. Everybody's a little concerned about this, you know. Now, there was one old Brahmin. His name was Krishnadas. He had been invited. He lived the next village over, and he observed. He said, if I may, he said, if you have fresh rice, go to the kitchen, cook that rice again, offer it to the deity, and then bring that. And apparently, in the hustle bustle of getting everything ready, they had not offered the rice. So this was done, and then they gave to Narottam, and he took it very happily. Oh, Krishnadas smiled very nicely. He was very satisfied. And the mother and father were in ecstasy. And the king, realizing this, and realizing as a result the importance of prasadam, he said, from this day forth, only food which has been offered to Krishna should be given to my son. So although the worship of Krishna was customary in the line, from the time of Narottam, everyone became even more focused on devotional practices. So, you know, when years went by, his studies continued. He was, as you can imagine, he was just an absolutely most amazing scholar and grasped everything, Shukidar. He would hear or see the lesson once and completely understand it. And the teachers used to comment amongst themselves. You know, teachers, they get together at the, you know, in the teacher's lounge. Hey, do you have so-and-so? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like back and forth amongst themselves about the student. These teachers, when they would get, you know, how is it possible that this boy learns everything so quickly? Is it possible that he's an incarnation of God or some demigod? And everyone in the town was just, you know, completely enamored by the boy. They would say such things like, just one glance at Narottam is sufficient to cool my mind and chase away all miseries I'm feeling. And another one would say, from every angle of vision, this prince is beauty personified. And another one would say, I don't know about you, but I've never seen such a gorgeous child. And so on like this, everyone glorified Krishnananda's son throughout the entire town. And Krishnananda, he simply gazed upon his son with just such happiness and joy, and as you can imagine, intense attachment. And in due course of time, he began to think, you know, my son is extremely capable in all respects. About time to get him married. Yep, I'm getting a little older, and I should follow the path of my father and be relieved of the kingly duties and pass them on to him. And so he consulted with different personalities in search of a suitable bride for Narottam. Now, meanwhile, Narottam is not interested at all. He's completely developing, even at this early stage of his life, a great love for Krishna. He would engage in chanting or worshiping the Lord and, you know, just become oblivious to everything else around him. And as a result of this, he lost all interest in mundane pleasures and had no interest, couldn't even bear to have his father bring him in and try and instruct him in the topics of royal pleasures or the properties or the responsibilities of a king, you know, and like this. And mother and father, mom and dad, they pretty much know everything. You know, they could understand he's just not interested. His apathy is a great disappointment to us. And, you know, they were, actually had a fear that he was going to run away from home and, you know, become a sadhu or something, you know. So they appointed someone to constantly watch over him. Not like a guard, but a guardian, you know. A guard, that's a little different. A guardian is someone who's got your best interest in mind. So, like that, you know. But this did nothing but convince Narottam he was living in a prison. And he just wanted to be free. Constantly in his room crying and waiting to see, how will I be delivered from this? He would roll on the ground chanting out the names of Gauranga, Nityananda, Advaita. Please, please, my Lord, save me from this hellish condition. Now, at this time, there was this Brahmin I mentioned, Krishnadas. Now, Narottam is the son of the king. He's actually, his nickname in the village was Rajkumar. And, you know, not everybody could just have access to him. But this Krishnadas, he had that access. He was a very powerful Brahmana, and he was a devotee of the Lord. So no one dared get in his way when he would come to see Narottam. And Narottam welcomed him wholeheartedly with great enthusiasm, offering obeisances, and they would sit together and Krishnadas would narrate all the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Adi, the Madhya, and the Antya. And, you know, he went on to glorify the qualities and activities of Nityananda, of Advaita. He would explain some of the histories of Gadadhar Pandit and Srivas and Vakreshwar and Haridas and Marari and Goridas Pandit and so on and so on and so on, all these different associates, Vasu Ghosh and Mukunda. He, you know, he just spoke about all these personalities that had been there with the Lord. He then narrated the story of Srinivasacharya. And when Narottam heard the story of Srinivasacharya, a great love in his heart arose. And he began to think, when will I get the association of Srinivas? Now, Srinivas let's do a little age comparison here. Srinivas is about 10 to 12 years, some say 15, older than Narottam. Narottam and Shyamananda, who will enter into the story later, they're the same age, you know, within a year or two of each other. Srinivas is senior. This comes into play as they're traveling back from Vrindavan. So, in this way, Narottam's spark of interest in devotional life, spark of interest in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu and his associates, is fanned vigorously by Krishnadas. So one day, about the age of 12, some histories say 14, either way, when he was a young man, Narottam fell asleep at night and he had a dream. And in that dream, Inanda appeared. And the description given is very similar to the description given when Inanda appeared to Kaviraj Goswami, how he was dressed in blue and dancing and so beautiful. And Nityananda came to him and he told him, he said, you should wake up. You should wake up. You should go to the Padmavati River. Go there and bathe. And when you do, you will receive a special gift from Mahaprabhu. And then he disappeared. So, in this way, Narottam got up. It was quite early. And he made his way to the Padmavati River. Now remember, the astrologer had mentioned about staying away from rivers. And his father had very diligently kept him from the river. You know, to the point that even he dug a well and had river water brought into the well so that he would, you know, he did everything he could. But the Inanda, he had a plan. So he went there and got to the river, offered his obeisances, and entered into the Padmavati River. When Narottam entered into the Padmavati River, the river feeling the waves of her waves against the body of Narottam experienced that prema that she'd experienced when Mahaprabhu entered and began to ecstasy and churning, and she manifested with the golden hue or the pot, whichever side you take, and said, I have a gift for you from Mahaprabhu. Please, you accept this. And when he accepted that gift, his bodily hue, which up to this point was Shyamvarna, he had a darkish complexion, kind of like, and became golden. Now there's a place in Khetri where this takes place. There's actually a temple there now, but there's a tree and just on the bank, and my dear friend and Vaishnavacharya guru Sitala gave me a little water, a little dirt, and a little piece of the branch from that spot. I have that at home. And so in this way, he was there lost in an ocean of ecstasy. And in the morning, he didn't appear, and mother and father became concerned and sent people out to look for him, and he was found and completely transformed. They thought maybe he'd been inhabited by a ghost, or, you know, he was ill, and nobody could figure out what was going on. And in the meantime, Narottam couldn't figure out, why don't they see you? I've got love for Krishna. I don't, you know. Anyway, so this continued on, and they increased the number of guardians, not guards. And day after day after day, he felt more and more trapped, looking for an escape. And then he had another dream. And in this dream, Mahaprabhu himself appeared. And the splendid beauty couldn't be compared to the most effulgent or glorious of gold or the brightest of lightning. Beautiful curling hair hanging down his back would turn the mind even of the most virtuous woman, it says. His earrings shone brightly and his lotus eyes were the trap of Cupid. His smiling face could easily defeat the effulgence of the moon, and the beautiful tilak on his forehead could capture one's breath. There's certain devotees, when you see them, their tilak's just like, wow, I wish I could do that. I mean, my tilak's always, you know, basic at best, but, you know, you see these devotees. I have a particular friend in Braj, his name's Rajendra, and his tilak, no matter when I've seen him over the last 40 years, his tilak is just immaculately perfect. Just amazing. So the tealock on the head of Mahaprabhu, capture one's breath. His graceful hands swept down to his knees. Garlands hung around his neck. His navel was finely shaped. His thin waist. On and on the description goes. And observing Mahaprabhu like this in the dream, Narottam shed tears of love and fell at his feet. Mahaprabhu placed his foot on Narottam's head. He said, "Oh, my Narottam, please look up at me. I cannot bear your tears anymore. Don't worry. You will go straight to Vrindavan. There you will be initiated by my dear devotee Lokanath. He will happily pour the nectar of the Maha Mantra into your ears. I have many plans for you, Narottam." And then Narottam's dream was broken. When Narottam realized that Mahaprabhu was not actually there with him, with his foot on his head, he rolled on the ground crying in disappointment again and again, hoping to see the Lord, but it didn't happen, and he fell asleep again. And when he fell asleep, again, Mahaprabhu appeared to him. And this time he was on the banks of the Ganga in Navadvip, and he was enjoying his pastimes with a host of devotees: Nityananda, Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva, Sarup, Narhari, Haridas, Bakreshwar, Mukunda Murari, Govinda Madhava, Vasudev, Ghost, Shuklambar, Brahmachari, Goridas, Pandit, Sri Sanjaya, Damodar, Mahesh, Shankar, and Yadavacharya, to name a few. All of them were surrounding Mahaprabhu and engaged in the Sankirtan, while all the people of Navadvip witnessed these divine pastimes. Eager to see the scene, even Brahma and Shiva were coming. Even the animals and the birds were charmed by this kirtan. Those who were born blind, suddenly they were able to see the kirtan of Mahaprabhu. So seeing this wonderful fun, and it was fun, seeing this wonderful fun, Nityananda wept in joy. And upon seeing Nityananda, Mahaprabhu Gaurachandra emotionally took him to his bosom and soaked Narottam with his own tears of ecstasy. Narottam fell on the ground at Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. Mahaprabhu lifted him and placed him in the arms of Nityananda, who then passed him off to Advaita. There's a hug party going on. Mahaprabhu also helped him to attain the mercy and the blessings of all the Vaishnavas that were there. When Narottam observed the beauty of Nityananda, he fell at the ground in front of Nityananda and placed his head on Nityananda's feet. And Nityananda blessed him with unconditional love for Sri Gauranga and then said to him, "Now you should go to Vrindavan." Upon seeing Advaita, Narottam also fell at his feet. Everyone gave Narottam their blessings, and everyone encouraged Narottam he should go to Vrindavan. Then Narottam woke up. But it was the morning, so he wasn't going back to sleep. So he consoled himself in this amazing dreams, finished his morning duties, wept with joy because he began to see so many auspicious signs indicating that good fortune was coming his way. Now, shortly after this, Narottam's father and several of his men had to go into different parts of Goda on business. You know, king's got a lot of responsibilities. Sometimes you have to go personally to see what's going on in this village and what's happening there, and so on like that. Narottam seized this opportunity. Somehow he managed to trick his mother. Somehow he managed to deceive the guards, the guardians. And quickly and quietly, he secretly left the house. Out of a fear of not wanting to be caught, he did not go to Navadvip for darshan of all the places of Mahaprabhu. You can imagine how painful that was. But he didn't want to be found. So he went through all the woods in the back pass to get to Vrindavan. And he disguised himself. You know, he was the Rajkumar. He was pretty well known. So he didn't want anybody to know who he was, so he disguised himself. For 15 days, he ran nonstop, it says. Day and night. Day and night. Finally, he collapsed underneath a tree and fell asleep. Now, in the meantime, the absolutely miserable condition of Narottam's mother and father was beyond description. They consoled each other. He's done it. Our Narottam has gone to Vrindavan. The strength of his mind could not be swayed from what he was focused on. When Narottam left Khatri, this prosperous, wonderful village became just a lifeless house place. All the household animals, all the residents, all the people, all the family members are just like lifeless bodies. In the meantime, Narottam is going on undauntedly and moving in this way and that way and hiding here and there. And, you know, people would see him and say, whoa, he's obviously somebody special. Even the golden champak flower would be embarrassed to be next to the color of this boy's beautiful face. And someone else would say, and just look at those beautiful eyes. What a superb nose and cheeks and eyebrows. Every feature of his hands, his knees, everything about him people described with just great joy. One person said, oh, fie upon Providence, who has no mercy for this boy's parents and has dragged him away from them at a young age. So everyone was extremely moved by Narottam. And when he would go through a village or a town, they would all go into their homes and bring out things for him to eat. And, oh, no, don't sleep there. Here, sleep on this bed and bring a bed out for him. And, you know, or some, here, you need this cloth. Take this cheddar and, you know, wrap yourself. But Narottam wasn't interested in any of it. Politely declined everything, wasn't interested in eating and sleeping, spent the nights chanting. Everyone was so sad to see the condition of Narottam. But Narottam would quickly beg their leave before they would figure out who he was and continue on his way to Braj. Within a very short time, he entered Mathura. And, of course, the tradition of Mathura, one goes to Vishramgat and bathes. Bathed in the Ganga there, and then he took a little rest. And in the solitude of that night of taking a little rest, he had a kirtan, small kirtan. And at that time, there was a Vaishnava resident of Mathura who had many varieties of prasadam brought and fed them to Narottam. He could see that this is a young boy who's traveled quite a bit. He didn't know much about him, but he understood he should feed him. And so Narottam, while they were sitting together, asked him about life in Braj. How is everything there? Rupa, Sanatan, Loganath, everybody's happy. And so this Vaishnava Brahman of Mathura pierced the heart of Narottam by having to deliver the news to him of the demise of Raghunath Das, Kashishwar Pandit, and Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. On hearing of the disappearance of these great personalities, Narottam threw himself to the ground, crying out, oh, Kashishwar Pandit, Sri Raghunath Bhat Goswami, how have I lost the sight of being able to see Rupa and Sanatan? Tears streamed from his eyes, and he was in practically a death-like state. All throughout that night, he and this Brahmin, this Vaishnava Brahmin, discussed the different pastimes of the Lord and his devotees. Late into the night, due to the divine arrangement of the Lord, they both fell asleep. Narottam had a dream. Narottam had so many dreams of inspiration in his life. And in this dream, Rupa, Sanatan, Kashishwar Pandit, Raghunath Bhatta, they all appeared before Narottam. Narottam fell at the feet of each and every one of them. All of them individually embraced Narottam and soaked him with their tears of joy. And they spoke sweetly to Narottam, some of which, interestingly enough, the Brahmin could hear. And with great satisfaction, they showered their mercy and their blessings upon Narottam. Narottam was unable to bear their separation, and he looked in all directions, and the Brahman was quite amazed that I knew this was someone special, but I had no idea how special this personality is. So he very lovingly embraced Narottam and thanked him for purifying him by giving him his association. And then Narottam bowed down at the Brahman and he requested him, "Please be kind and let me leave your association, for I am dying to see the feet of the Goswami still there in Vrindavan. Kindly be merciful to me and fulfill my desire in this way." And with tears in his own eyes, the Brahman affectionately embraced him and gave him his blessings and sent him on his way. And it mentions that as Narottam proceeded from Mathura to Braj, that the Brahman just simply stood on the path and watched and watched and watched until he disappeared into the horizon. While Narottam was walking, he began to think, "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought such a low and unqualified man as me here to the sacred land of Vrindavan. He has sent me to the abode of mercy, Lokanath Goswami. Will Lokanath accept me as his servant? Will I be able to see the lotus feet of Gopal Bhatta, Bhugarbha Goswami, Jiva Goswami? Will they place those lotus feet upon my head? Will they show their mercy to me, such an unworthy person? Srinivasacharya, who I have sought for so much of my life," so much of his life, he's 15, 16 years old maybe, "so much of my life, will he love and like a poor soul as me, as his friend?" So this is how his mind was occupied as he entered Vrindavan. We can compare this to sometimes how our mind is occupied. Okay, let me say, I got to go to the Lloyd Bazaar, then I got to go to Nandalal's. Maybe I'll stop by the Radhanan Temple while I'm down there. Oh, I got to stop by the Tulsi, well, you know, like that. Narottam's completely in a different state of mind. Now, Srinivas, in the meantime, is in Vrindavan, and he has this very unusual feeling that something wonderful is about to happen. I feel like I'm going to meet a very good friend. So when he fell asleep that evening, Rupa Goswami appeared to Srinivas and he said, "Oh my Srinivas, in the morning you will meet a very good friend and he will be Narottam." So when Srinivas woke up in the morning, he ran to Jiva Goswami and explained his dream to him. Jiva Goswami was very happy because he had been waiting for Narottam. Indication had been there that Narottam was coming. He told Srinivas, he said, "Previously Mahaprabhu told me about Narottam, and I have already told you about him. This is who is coming." So Jiva Goswami hurried off to the grounds of the Govindaji temple, and Srinivas returned to his house just waiting and waiting and waiting. Suddenly someone approached Srinivas and said, "A prince has come from Goda. He is a young man with beautiful features, and his body is soaked in tears. I cannot describe the wonderful emotions of this man as he observed the face of Sri Govinda." And Jiva Goswami was so happy, he rushed to meet him and took Narottam on his lap and embraced him. Hearing these words, Srinivas, very, very excitedly, he also ran to the temple of Govindaji. He became overwhelmed at mentions of seeing Narottam. Like a poor man that had gained a priceless jewel, Srinivas rushed to embrace Narottam. The bond of friendship that immediately cemented between the two of them, different authors in this pastime from different sources have all said the same thing. We can't even describe this. It's simply too amazing. At that time, Sri Krishna Pandit, who was the head pujari for Govindaji, bought garlands from the deity and placed them on Narottam. And Jiva Goswami saw to it that Narottam got settled and, you know, was able to rest and, you know, kind of recuperate from the long journey. And then he took him to see Lokanath Goswami. And They had to go some ways out of Vrindavan. Of course, Vrindavan now in our mind is a different place than Vrindavan in this time. But even with that, Lokanath Goswami lived some considerable distance and had, you know, his secluded hut. And Lokanath Goswami was in a very pitiful condition, feeling the separation of Rupa and Sanatana. He was just, such pain, separation. And Jiva Goswami offered obeisances, bowed down to him. And Jiva Goswami had gone forward and left Narottam on the edge of the clearing. You just wait here. And so he spoke to Lokanath about Narottam. And then he invited Narottam to come forward. And he presented him to Lokanath Goswami. And Narottam fell at the lotus feet of who would be his spiritual master. And Lokanath Goswami placed his feet on the head of Narottam. With sweet words, he assured Narottam that he was in his rightful place being invited here to Vrindavan. Now, of course, we know that Narottam expressed a desire to be initiated. And Jiva had already told him, it's not likely. He's taken a vow that he's not going to initiate any disciples. He's not accepting anyone. But, this had been explained to him by Mahaprabhu. So he begged Lokanath. Lokanath said, no, I'm sorry, that's not possible. I'm not accepting any followers, disciples like that. And we know how the story goes, that Narottam decided, well, I have to do some service. And so each morning, of course, Lokanath would rise and go to a place where he would attend to nature's business of the body, and then go to the Jumuna and take bath and come back and do his bhajan. So when he would come in the morning, the place was always quite nice, because after he had left, Narottam would come with his little bucket and his broom and some sand, water, and clean the place up and sprinkle fresh cow dung around like that. And so it was not a jacuzzi tub with full-length mirrors and lighting or anything, but it was very accommodating, very comfortable. So Lokanath was quite elderly, but he wasn't blind. He could see something's going on here. And so one morning he waited, and Narottam came out to do his seva, and he chastised him. I told you, no, not happening. No disciples. And Narottam was in ecstasy. He was being chastised by he who he saw to be his spiritual master. And he gave him the wonderful example. He said, just as a young girl fixes a man in her heart and cannot be swayed to think of marrying anyone else, so I have accepted you as my spiritual master. I cannot think of anyone else. Lokanath more or less said, all right, you can continue this way, but don't tell anybody. Don't make a big deal out of it. Just come quietly to your service. So as the story goes, one morning when Lokanath came for this, not when Narottam came for this service, Lokanath was there, and he said, by the strength of your vow, you have broken my vow. I will happily accept you as my disciple. And on a full moon day, just like he was born on a full moon day, he was initiated by Lokanath Goswami. Lokanath Goswami asked him to please place himself under the care of Jiva Goswami, because Jiva Goswami was running a gurukula, so to speak, more like a training camp for these prominent personalities, Srinivas, Narottam, and Duki Krishna, who would become at some point in the story Shyamananda. Training them in all the different writings of the Goswamis. I mean, you can imagine at that time in Vrindavan, so many books had just been finished. Chaitanya Charitamrita is finished, Vidagha Madhava, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so on and so on and so on. All these different books, Hari Bhakti Vilasa, all these books are being written by these different great personalities and are available there in Vrindavan. And this is what Jiva Goswami is using as they have a word for that in college. for what he was training all these devotees with. You know, this was the
curriculum.
Yes, curriculum. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't remember. This was the curriculum. Okay, today we'll study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay, yeah, here's the original copy right here. We're looking at page, you know, palm leaf number 22. I mean, just so amazing. So in this way, each of them became, as I mentioned, just solid, fast classmates, encouraging each other, studying together, doing service together, doing kirtan together. You know, it was just such a wonderful mood. So many stories and pastimes go on here. And then Jiva Goswami receives an inquiry from Janava Mata to arrange to have the books sent to Bengal, where they don't have them. Now, there's a few ways. At this point, the story, depending on who you read or hear from, has a couple of different angles. But basically, books were sent with the boys. And it was at the end of Kartik. And at the end of the Kartik, there was this big, big festival celebrating the end of Kartik. All the local devotees were called. And as it is said, at that time, Jiva Goswami more or less dropped the bombshell in front of everyone. Now, of course, if you really want someone to give you what you're wanting from them, you ask them in front of all their associates so that it's very awkward for them to refuse. So in front of everyone, Jiva Goswami asked Gopal Bhatta, Lokanath Goswami, if they would allow him to send their disciples with his own disciple, Jiva Goswami, who was actually Ridho Chaitanya's disciple, to Bengal on this mission to spread the message of Mahaprabhu. Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Lokanath Goswami enthusiastically agreed. So in due course of time, arrangements are made in a big cart, a big bullock cart drawn by two strong ox and with 10 guards, and this huge chest filled with all the famous books was placed there, and then the boys were sent on their way. As they departed from Vrindavan, I mean, the scene was just unbearable. The feeling of separation that all the residents of Vrindavan who had come to like these three personalities like their own children were now seeing them more or less graduate from school and go off in the world on their own. You know, here's your diploma, now go make something of yourself. And it mentions that Jiva Goswami and a small group walked with them all the way to Mathura. And then from Mathura, they continued on by themselves. And the three of them began, each in their own right, adventures and services and activities in their devotional lives, which will fill many, many, many more hours of pastimes that we do not have today. So we'll finish there. I'll encourage everyone to spend the rest of your day or some portion of the rest of your day reading about Narottam. There are many resources out there, most notably for our easy access and reading. One of the things that it mentions about Narottam was as he was preaching in his later years, he made the science of Krishna consciousness in all of its deep philosophical realm available to the common Bengali by the way he presented things through Parthana and Prem Bhakti Chandrika. In a similar way, Sitala has made the pastimes of Narottam easily available to us in our own way of reading by her book on the life of Narottam. So if you can get your hands on that, you definitely want to read that today. And spend the day discussing the pastimes, the appearance, the activities, the preaching, the glorious realm. Also, Indradyumna Swami has just finished three very nice lectures on Narottam's life as well. So endless resources, wonderful opportunity to think about Narottam, what a hero he is to us. As many devotees say, the original hero of the Sankirtan movement. So we'll finish there. And I thank all of you for giving me this opportunity to speak about Narottam. We are very, very happy to have this opportunity to think about Narottam and to study about him and understand the importance of his position in devotional service. Thank you very much. Narottam Das Thakur ki jai.